Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, ACK.
ACK says, good morning, Freaky Friday.
Freaky Friday.
Let me bring the freak to Freaky Friday, Dan. traditionally, this is also Fascism Friday. Like, this is the trick we plan, everybody, Dan. Every day is Fascism Friday.
Every day.
It's not just this Friday. Like, it's not just Fridays. Like, any day we talk about something, I'm sure it would only take us adding one sentence directly connected to fascism. Yet, it's about the ritual of holding space on Fridays.
That's right. Hey, Ellen. Hi, Ari.
But today we are continuing our conversation on climate change.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about fascism. We're going to also be a little bit positive, a little bit sunshiny about it, too, maybe, for us. But first, we had a recommendation. We wanted to have a recommendation. You know, like, we're always throwing out ideas for, you know, this transmission broadcast and all of our listeners. Because we've been accused of being angry and effective. And ineffective. Angry and ineffective. I kind of slurred my...
Yes, you did. It was a run-on
angry and ineffective. We thought it'd be great if anybody out there has the mojo and interest to create a design a t-shirt for transmission that just somehow has the transmission logo and says angry and ineffective. Yeah. I would wear that shirt and kind of show it to the world on transmission. That'd be fun.
Yeah, we could have our mega donors spread it all around. I'm thinking that Laura, if you end up listening to this, Laura, I'm talking to you, because she seems to have done like every interesting on-beat and off-beat job. So I think that she could probably do this or arrange to have it done. Virgil is offering to make the shirt.
I can make the shirt with your face. I don't know if
I want my face on the shirt.
Yeah, that might make it. That might terrify small children. I don't know. I guess it depends. Ellen says I'd be happy to screen print some t-shirt.
Here we go.
People want to do this. Like, and it isn't. I just feel like having a t-shirts in general that people who are accused of being too cynical, we could just wear these angry and ineffective t-shirts as kind of like a statement to society. Like, I just somehow there's a power in just owning that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
CK brings up something important. We were talking about this right before getting on. It's sentencing day for Chauvin.
I like that spelling Floyd. Of his last name. That's sort of like Chopin or something.
I like to call him Chauvin sometimes. Just
Chauvin. Yeah. Chow down on Chauvin. That could be the zombie version of it.
This kind of vaguely connects, like, because we're really talking about systems thinking. And usually what Dan and I suspect will happen is they'll sentence him severely. Because the system is willing to scapegoat individuals. Like, is Chauvin the problem? Well, yes, he's a problem, but he's not the system. And so the system will throw him out and send him to the wolves in order to kind of communicate the symbolic message of, see, we've changed, without having to change anything. So people will rightfully celebrate, look, he was sentenced in a way that at least takes it seriously, but it still isn't systemic change. And we're hearing all across the country, all these defunding the police and police abolition movements are really hitting the wall. Like, there's very few systemic wins. And so we can be glad for this somewhat symbolic win, but we should recognize that it's not systemic. We're talking about climate change and we're talking about systems. And today I think we want to talk a little bit about, well, what do you do?
We do, and sort of framing the problem in a way that makes the what do you do clearer, right? So so one of the ways to look at this problem, and we did mention my new book the other day, creation's wisdom. And so the way that I frame the problem there is that what this really is a crisis of relationship. That the human being, and particularly in the industrialized society, which is largely governed by a particular form of imperial Christianity, has a very disordered relationship between the human being and the rest of creation. And basically the nature of the disorder is the idea that the human being is separate and superior from the rest of nature. And basically we can do whatever the fuck we want and it'll be fine. And what we're finding is not true. It's not true. And, you know, and there's some, I mean, if one can have a sort of, you know, twisted sense of humor about this, there are actually some kind of amusing things going on in terms of what's happening with the climate change. And one of them, and Gregory and I were just talking about this yesterday, right? So with this heat wave and this drought in the Mountain West, one of the things that's happening, right, is that all of these Trump dogs, who are these ranchers and different things out there, who think that it's fine to run massive amounts of cattle through an arid forest ecology, they're all running out of water. And their cows are dying, and they're all having to sell all their cows. And so now these people who are touting freedom and, you know, and Bundy is the poster child for this. He's now running for the governor of Idaho. And the reason he got driven out of California was that he wanted to run his cows on BLM land in the Eastern Sierras, which again is a totally horrible place to run cattle. And it's just, there's just not enough water and grasslands there for them. Mm-hmm. And this comes directly from this attitude of, I do not need to pay attention to any kind of ecological relationships, right? And so now these very people who are like, we're going to be free. We can do whatever the hell we want. You know, we don't need to wear masks, blah, 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 all the whatever stuff. They're all losing their livelihood. And of course, this disordered relationship thing that happens in general then leads to the disordered socio-political relationships that we call fascism, right? Because fascism really is just the ultimate political expression of this kind of disordered relationship. And so if we see that disordered relationship is kind of the root of the problem, then that becomes the thing that we can begin to do something about. And we can start to look at all of our own relationships. And yeah, we can look at this systemically, but we've talked about the fact that the individual can't fix climate change. And that's part of the, you know, despair and difficulty that people have with it. But we can look at all of our own relationships, including our relationship with ourselves, our relationship with, whether you call it God or the universe, the greater reality. And then our relationships with others, and begin to say, okay, how can we restore some kind of right relationships there, which brings greater life to our particular circle of existence?
A couple of quick comments. CK says the Colorado River is a huge part of the conversation, for sure.
Yeah.
Ellen says my late grandpa's land in Montana is part of those ranches now. Yeah. I never know, what do you call that, like slanty frown face?
Yeah, I kind of
consternation. I don't
know. Consternation. Yeah. Yeah.
So I just want to kind of hover over this idea of changing relationships, because in a society that tends to want to collapse everything down into individual morality, it's easy to interpret that as, in a very individualistic way, instead of thinking about systems. Like, here's the thing. Like, so let's go back to this oft-used example of Eichmann in Jerusalem, Hannah Arendt's book, where she talks about the banality of evil. where he doesn't question things because he's receiving these cliches and he's accepting the terms of the relationships that society has given him.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is, like, it's not that he needed to think about things differently. It's just the fundamental way of his relating to other people in a system was toxic. And so what we're asking people is not just to simply, like, be nice to their neighbors. Like, that's not, it's not like this individual moral, like, I need to, like, think about things a little differently. It's fundamentally questioning the way we relate. And then even, like, to the point of antagonistically analyzing the things around them that get in the way of relationships. So a good example is that a lot of philosophers have talked about over the millennia is currency. So, I mean, there's a lot of fascinating literature out there from philosophers and economists about how currency changes ways that human beings interrelate. So, you know, that's where we get these ideas, like, you don't lend friends money, because we know that once you have this expectation of exchange, it kind of can taint a relationship. So that's one example of, like, well, what does it look like when you start having a different way of materially relating to your friends? And this is where people start talking about gift economies, which are more ancient, where you give and share alike. So you start thinking, okay, what does it mean to start changing how I relate to my stuff and how I relate with my stuff to friends? What can I imagine as a healthy way of relating to the land? Mm-hmm. Like, when I listen to Jesus saying, consider the lilies, instead of it taking it as a remedy for being anxious, saying, like, well, what if I actually pay attention to the lilies? Like, really give my attention to what's around me and ask, what does it mean for me to have a loving relationship with this watership, with my friends? And then you start, that leads into these bigger questions of, I can throw out terms like prefigurative politics, like, where intentional communities are trying to live out in a small way what they want society to be at large. You start talking about creating alternative systems. People will sometimes call that dual power, where, like, if you're trying to come up with an alternative system for, like, insurance, like, how do you pool resources to care for one another's health needs? Mm-hmm. And it starts becoming this fundamental way of reframing how we relate to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's not very individual in the sense that it starts at this very individual scale. But then it's with an eye towards how do I change my way of relating to the system in a way that can be viral, like, or spread.
Yeah, or, you know, to give another example from my own life and experience. So when we lived in Vermont and had our farm, the other thing that we did was that we built a little medical clinic at the farm, and that's where Deborah and her midwife partner practiced. And so one of the things that we wanted to do was to make healthcare affordable for anyone. And, you know, we've worked with a lot of people that, you know, we were poor. Everybody we knew was poor. I mean, it was pretty much, you know, Vermont had this great bumper sticker at the time that you would see that said moonlight or starve, you know, and it was all these people that were, you know, sort of going back to the land or trying to scrape by, you know, in these little towns that the old industrial economy had left. And so one of the things that we realized was that in order to have this clinic, we could not have malpractice insurance, because malpractice insurance for a family practice doctor and doing obstetrics is obscenely expensive. It's like $20,000 a year, and $20,000 a year in those days was even more than that is now, but it's a lot of money, right? So what we did was we wrote something up about that, and whenever they would get a new patient, you know, they would sit down and give them this handout, sit down, talk about it, and say, look, we don't have this. And, you know, part of that is so that you can afford to come here. And we're not getting rich off of you and off of this. But we have to have a different kind of relationship, because so if something goes wrong, if you're not happy about something, we need to be able to talk about this and to relate to it. And do you agree to that? right? Do you agree to enter into that different kind of medical relationship than when you go to a regular clinic or hospital? And, you know, and so that was one of the things that made healthcare there incredibly affordable and incredibly high quality. And, you know, we never had a problem with that. We never had a problem. You know, hundreds, thousands of people went through our clinic over the years, and that was never an issue. But we had to intentionally do something different, right, in order to create that different, not only just relational behavior, but also economic behavior. And it was a risk for us, right? I mean, we had to step outside of the system and take a risk and do something different. But we were willing to do that because this was a really important value for us.
Well, and then this is where it gets interesting because, like, you know, the stuff we're talking about, like, oftentimes someone will come and say, well, that's nice, but that's still not organizing. It's still not policy level. And that's true. Like, that's true. Like, and, but this is where people have to really think about how those two things relate. Like, so thinking about climate change. So, like, right now, some old friends from the community are moving upstairs in our house. And so Charlie has brought, you know, we have now rabbits in our backyard, and like, there's going to be a whole ecosystem with their poop is going to be part of our compost. And Charlie plants apple trees around the city and tends to them and does gardening, volunteers to garden for schools and stuff. Well, that's all good. But the part of the thing is, like, when you do that, you start to get to know other people who are committed to similar sorts of practices. And that becomes a relational network that starts it's very much at this lower level, but then it opens up capacity to work together towards shared goals. So, you know, I'm not that many steps removed from a lot of the like all the people that go up to the pipeline resistance stuff. Like, I know people, but I'm pretty sure almost everyone who's been there is only like two or three steps removed from me. Like, this isn't like, they're not entirely random people. We're part of a larger network. And so movement work is largely built on these interrelationships that have been cultivated to develop alternatives at a smaller level, coming together as a coalition to start thinking about how do we put pressure on the larger toxic system.
So. Yeah, well, and actually in our case, it was connected to organizing because there was a network of midwives within Vermont that had regular meetings. And, you know, part of what we were doing and did was to advocate for and create and maintain midwifery and home birth as being legal in the state, right? So there are a lot of states that lay midwifery and home birth is not legal, right? You cannot have your baby in your home, which is just kind of amazing to me, right? And so, you know, we did organize, and it was connected to policy, and right, you know, you're exactly correct. I mean, it's great that you point out the sort of few steps removed thing, because I think we don't recognize that. We don't recognize like how close we are to some of these wider issues, and you know, I think sometimes when we talk about system or when people think about system, They feel like it's
massive.
You know, it's massive and it's far away. You know, it's kind of like the deist God, you know, like it's somewhere out there and very nebulous. But the truth is that it's actually a lot closer than we think. And especially folks that live in smaller areas, right? I mean, and what the problem is, and this is this relational thing, is that the disordered relationships create boundaries and walls between the individuals and systemic action.
Yes.
Right. And we think, oh, this is inaccessible to me. This is confusing. This is far away. I don't want to pay attention to any of this. You know, I just need to do my thing. And that's part of the disordered relationship, right? Yeah. That is an illusion. We're not that far from it, right? We're not that far away from it. But we need to step out of that illusion to put ourselves in that different place and that different kind of relationship.
No, and this, you know, just to underline that again, like, let's talk about what I would consider the Christian left or radical Christianity. I mean, that's a lot of people in the world, but I'm pretty sure I'm not more than any, like, a couple steps removed from anyone in that whole, like, Cornel West, like, I've talked to him and I know people who are closer to him. Like, so it's not, mm-hmm. and he's like a big deal. Like, I'm not using that to name drop. I'm saying, like, even these people that you think of as part of, like, yeah. this big system, like, most of us are not that far removed. The thing is, we get conditioned to think about things in certain ways, and it captivates our imagination. And it's helpful to think about political systems, economic systems, institutions as ways of managing humanity, as ways of mediating relationships. And a lot of ways of mediating relationships are toxic because they bake in certain kinds of mythological myth systems and deceptions, and also hierarchical arrangements that are not helpful. And so we tend to normalize them, and we can't even imagine how to do it differently. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we're talking about here is, like, okay, you do these individual, like, recycling and, you know, like, whatever the things that you're told to do, like, they're actually a part of this overall way of reframing our relationships and trying to, like, start to imagine with other people across these networks, how can we organize differently based upon healthier ways of relating. So organizing is a way of changing relationships. It's not simply about collecting the sum totality of our will to push against something, which is how a lot of people want to break down what organizing is. And that's not really what organizing is. It's not, I want to say no to this thing, so let's get everyone who says no together to push as hard as we can. Mm-hmm. That's not really what's going on. That's a very vulgar and content way of thinking about something that should be understood as intrinsically relational. More comments coming in. Ellen writes, what an incredible risk. If only taking on relational risk were systemic rather than just Deborah and you, Dan, being amazing people. Thinking about the liability insurance from the nonprofit law office where I used to work.
It's
a big one. Mm-hmm. Like, whose risks are protected by our system? Question to ask.
Yep.
Like, this absolutely. Almost always comes up with to justify billionaires. Jeff Bezos took all the risks in order to become a multi-billionaire. Never mind the person who risks everything to get a job at a warehouse, and if they get hurt, they're going to become destitute. Their risk is not less because they don't have as much money. Like, somehow thinking that Jeff Bezos's life has more weight to it or substance because of his wealth is stupid. Like, it's morally and ethically stupid. CK writes, when I lived in Washington State in Port Townsend, it was illegal to collect rainwater. This is so dumb too. Like, so when you want to do something, you still have the law to deal with. By the way, everyone had rainwater collection barrels. Yeah, like, that seems like a good
fucking practice. Well, and that's, you know, and I was going to mention this, or I think maybe we did mention this earlier this week. This is a fascinating thing. It is illegal to collect rainwater most places in this country. Which is pretty amazing when you think about it. So that the water that is falling on your property, and again, we've talked about private property as this interesting relational construct, that you can't keep that, you can't take that, right? And so that is this highly disordered relationship, an incredible way of controlling people, and also forcing you into a relationship with water that is highly disordered, right? So not only is it illegal to collect rainwater, but in all building codes across the country, it is illegal to build gray water systems in your house, right? So it's illegal to recycle water for non-potable uses. And what that does, of course, is it means that we waste an incredible amount of clean water. You know, I remember years ago, this meme, it's just always stuck with me. You know, you may remember these memes that there's this little black kid that's got this very quizzical look on his face, and he's saying all sorts of clever things.
I like that meme.
Yeah. And so one of the ones was like, so you have so much clean water that you shit in it, right? Which is a perfect description of this disordered relationship, right? So we build these monstrous factories, we clean this water, we put it back in our pipes, and then we defecate in it. You know, and it's like, this makes no sense, right? We should be using gray water for those systems, but that's illegal to do. And so what this does is it forces us into a disordered relationship with the one thing that we really need. I mean, oxygen and water are pretty much right up there with the basic things that we cannot do without.
It's right next to gummy bears.
Yeah. Yeah, that's your relational ecology. All right, more comments.
The good system is more like mycelium. Hard to find unless you're looking, and then you can barely unsee if you try. That's a good way of thinking. And there's kind of a logic and a posture to this that really has to be formed. Like, it's a formation thing. And it's good when we can, when good systems have elders and teachers to form you. But like a lot of us, we fumble into it and start connecting with people with the same questions. And then we create safe spaces to ask, to problematize things and mess around and try to figure out stuff. Like, that's kind of how I got into this. And then you start noticing who's doing what, and then you start making connections, and you realize, like, this is true. Like, here's again, I'm pretty sure I'm only 2 degrees from AOC. Same as you, not to name drop, just saying, celebrityness is not true. Like, those who've never played 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, it's actually a fascinating way of thinking about systems. Like, that's the game where you can name any actor in Hollywood, and you can connect them within 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. You probably do within 3 if you're a mastermind, but like, yeah. Oh, so Kevin Spacey was in such and such with so and so, and they were in such and such with Kevin Bacon. We can all do that with pretty much anyone in this country. Yeah. And that's an interesting exercise to say, like, you know, when people, when I used to do a podcast and I could interview Noam Chomsky, people would be like, how, oh my God, just Noam Chomsky. How did you interview him? I'm like, because he's not that inaccessible, and I know someone who knows him.
Right.
You know, so like, you can do that. And well, what's the relevance of that? It means that if you strip away these barriers that have been put on us, you can start saying, like, look, think about what's possible. I mean, and it's kind of a fun kind of thing to think about, but then also, like, it becomes real. Like, I can, what happens if a bunch of us wanted to connect with these other people around a common cause? You start getting into this really fun dream space where you can start scheming together. Along those lines, Ellen says, good fuck you practices. The practice manual, I didn't realize I needed until now.
Yeah, that would be great.
And it's kind of a common saying of mine, so I feel like other people must say something similar out there. Again, systems and everything. So that is a book that needs to be written. Seymour, who I like that you're watching from YouTube. It makes us feel like it's good to put it there. I love this conversation. The thinking that the issues are abstract is not an accident. We are constantly taught that we're alone. And if we practice sustainability in our private lives, we're alone.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, that exactly. The thinking that the issues are abstract is not an accident.
It's a lot that. Of our myths in our society nurture this idea of the atomized self or the buffered self. I was just listening to a podcast. I listened to this thing called Throughline from NPR, which is a history podcast. And I'm excited because they're starting a series on capitalism. And they had a roundtable with someone from the Cato Institute, who are libertarians, and then a couple people who are probably at least left of center. And every time there was a problem, he kept saying, well, I just sit down with them. The problem is in the system. This is like, sit down with someone who feels like they're overworked and they're afraid of becoming destitute. Sit down with them and talk about what's realistic. What kind of job should they be doing? And he wanted to break everything down to the individual level, that there's no systemic problems. The free market will sort it out. And individuals have to make smart, rational choices. Most social scientists have debunked the idea of rational choice theory as a driving force in our society. That is pushed on us because then we don't notice the system and we're more malleable and can be function within the system that benefits the powerful. Like this is.
Well, right. We're malleable and disempowered because we feel bad and guilty if things aren't going well in our lives. Right. And then we shrink. Right. And you can see people physically like, oh, you know, I'm not making good choices. You know, I mean, how many times have our, you know, poor children been hammered into the make good choices? You know, otherwise you could end up under a bridge.
Or work at McDonald's. By the way, this is fascinating to you. Just two quick things. And there's a fast food chain in Texas that is starting to pay teenage managers of their fast food chains, $50,000 a year in order to come up, make up the shortfall. They've noticed the talented teenagers who can manage. And they're like, we'll just pay you $50,000 a year if you're willing to do this, which is fascinating, just as an aside. But the other thing, just to get quick, like, and again, like people that are really organizer minded, sometimes it's right to be frustrated when you break it down to the individual level, but this is really at some level where it has to start. So Paulo Freire, I brought this up before, part of his thinking is this assumption that you take, when you're working with campesinos or peasants, that you nurture dialogue where the two people, students, can start problematizing something and understand the problem. And then that's the process of conscientization, where they realize this is the problem. I'm now questioning my place in the system, is where it all begins. And then those people who have shared that dialogue, because dialogue in a very particular philosophical term, people start dialoguing, they can start creating possibilities. Like, so it has to break down where, and Jesus said this, wherever two or more are gathered in my name, he's not just saying a nicety. He's saying wherever two or more people are gathered in with a kingdom way of seeing things, the Spirit of God is there, and we can start imagining alternatives. CK writes, yet Nestle owns a large aquifer and a huge amount of water rights in America. Effed up.
Nestle is a truly satanic organization.
Yes. Wow. CK writes, jelly babies, Mark, not gummy beets. I'm assuming you mean gummy bears, but I thought we were friends.
All right, let's move on.
CK writes, I'm 1 degree to Patrick Stewart. Yeah, CK was a body man for Patrick Stewart during a production of, I can't remember what play production it was, so CK hung out with Patrick Stewart, which is pretty badass.
Ooh.
Seymour writes, continued, the truth, of course, is that we're part of a community. Who cares whether we ever connect to that community or not? And that makes policy possible. What's more, the tangible good locally. CK writes, yes, I'm name dropping, lol. You can name drop Patrick Stewart. He's like an exception to, it's not gross when you name drop Patrick Stewart the way you, other people name drop people. Seymour writes, the atomized self and the nuclear family. That's another idol that we should talk about sometime. The mythology is deep.
Yeah.
Ellen writes, so how far up and down do our property deeds go? The idea that you can own an aquifer under the place where many people live is mind-bogglingly infuriating.
Well, this is all a great thing, and we're coming to the end. But so, for example, in West Virginia, the entire state, if you own property, you do not own the mineral rights. You cannot own your own mineral rights. And so what this means, and you can see this, I mean, this is unbelievable, right? But this is a perfect example of this kind of disordered relationship shit that we're talking about. You can literally wake up one day and there is an oil company in your front yard drilling a well in your yard. And there is nothing you can do about it.
And you don't benefit from it at all. You just experience the consequences of that.
No, No. And so you drive around in West Virginia and you see these oil wells in people's yards. Right. And now, you know, it first started out as wells. And now, of course, it's fracking. We went to this one place. This guy owned this piece of woodland and he came there. And literally one day there was a 2-lane giant road that had been cut through his woods. There was a 6-acre landing pad that had been cut open in this wood, and there was a giant fracking site on his property. He had no idea this was happening until he went there, and there's nothing he could do about it because he does not own the mineral rights underneath his property.
Yeah, there's the idea of private property is such a big, I mean, it's complicated. Yeah. But it just shows you that the show Beverly Hillbillies is a lie. Because Jeb wouldn't get that Texas.
Jeb,
CK brings, it was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? That's where he was hanging out with Patrick Stewart.
Oh, okay.
Eminent domain. Again, these eminent domain laws, I wouldn't have a problem with it if we had an ethical system. Like somehow eminent domain benefits Walmart.
Right.
Not the sum totality of the people of a small town. Virgil writes, hiring right now and the whole nobody wants to work trope is a great example of how we're not alone even when we're alone. Of course, it's difficult to find people to work when an extra 600,000 people dropped out of the economy hiring pool in the last year. Ellen writes, reminds me of the first scene in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where Earth is being demolished for the bureaucratic aliens' imminent domain. Yes. Yep. And Virgil says, that's why there are some philosophies that differentiate between private property and personal property. I tend to think that's a helpful move, but we don't have time to dive into that because we're way past time.
Yeah, we're way past time. All right. Well, thanks a lot, everybody. Great to see you and hear you. Thanks for the comments.
And
we'll be back
next week.
Next week.
Peace.